Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Ashley Thompson, Katie Weaver, and Mario Ritter Jr. But first, this report. Priscilla C. of Holland Village in Singapore has a bright future ahead of her. The 17-year-old has been accepted to study economics at Stanford University in California. She hopes to begin her studies this autumn. But Priscilla, who asked VOA not to use her full name, fears the ongoing coronavirus pandemic will have a major effect on her college experience. She worries about travel restrictions. She also worries about the United States' uneven actions taken to fight the disease outbreak. And she wonders whether she will even be able to attend college classes in person in the fall. It's added a lot of stress and uncertainty to the process, she said. The most exciting thing about deciding to become an international student was attending college in California, and now there's a big possibility that I won't physically be on the campus I was dreaming about. She said she trusts that schools will do what they feel is best for their students. But even if colleges do reopen in the fall, Priscilla says she will still probably have health and safety concerns. And she and her friends fear they may miss out on many traditional college experiences and memories.
Other international students with plans to study in America have similar thoughts and concerns. And experts worry the effects of the pandemic could cause problems for colleges and universities. The Institute of International Education, or IIE, does a yearly count of America's international students using State Department data. During the 2018-2019 school year, the IIE found there were over 1,095,000 international students in the U.S. This represents 5.5% of the total college student population. But the number of new, first-time international students studying at American colleges and universities was 7% lower than the year before. The coronavirus crisis is making it more difficult for international students hoping to come to America, observers say. Philip Altbach is director of the Center for International Higher Education at Boston College. He says international students were already dealing with the rising cost of American higher education before the coronavirus pandemic, and the belief that the U.S. has become less welcoming to foreigners is widespread.
Because of the pandemic, the U.S. has a travel ban on foreign visitors from China and Europe. About 34% of international students that come to the U.S. are from China, the IIE reports. Christopher Rim is the chief executive officer of Command Education, a New York-based college advising company. He says many of the students his company works with are from places like Hong Kong and Shanghai. He says many of them have been considering other choices for international higher education. Some U.S. schools have already said they will reopen in the fall. But it is still unclear how classes will operate in many cases. The possibility remains that many American colleges and universities will reopen online. That means that international students who remain in their home countries may have to take classes in the middle of the night. It also means they will not get the traditional experiences of living in shared housing and taking part in campus events. Rim said, "They're not paying a $70,000 or $80,000 tuition to sit in front of a computer in their bedroom or their living room at home."
Rim noted that a decrease in international students coming to the U.S. would present a serious financial problem for schools and their surrounding communities. International students added over $44 billion to the nation's economy in 2018, the U.S. Department of Commerce reports. But James Hundreiser of the National Association of College and University Business Officers argues that the threat to American higher education is not so great. He says schools no longer have as much financial dependence on international students' tuition as they once did, and the quality of online education is actually very good. Priscilla C. still plans to study at Stanford, even with her concerns. So do her friends, who also have plans to study in America. And even if there is a decrease in the number of international students, Altbach, Rim, and Hundreiser all agree that it will not last long. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Pete Musto.
As English learners, you have probably noticed some words and phrases you do not understand when reading reports about the new coronavirus. Today, we look at some of the most common COVID-19 terms.
We can start with epidemic versus pandemic. An epidemic is when a disease spreads through a population and affects many individuals at the same time. An epidemic may affect a community, province, or even a whole country. A pandemic is a kind of epidemic, one that spreads to a much larger area, or even worldwide. Like many medical-related terms in English, the word comes from Greek. Pan means all or every. The second part of the word, demic, comes from the Greek word demos, meaning people. On March 11th, the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus crisis a pandemic. At a news conference that day, the WHO's director general said, "Pandemic is not a word to use lightly or carelessly." He was reminding people that the word is used only for the most extreme and dangerous situations. The virus is now present in 213 countries and territories worldwide.
COVID-19 is infectious and contagious. Infectious, the adjective form of infection, describes diseases that are spread through the environment. Malaria, for example, is an infectious disease. Humans contract the disease through mosquito bites. Malaria, however, is not contagious or able to be passed from one person to another. You already know that COVID-19 is easily passed person to person. Common colds and the seasonal flu are also contagious and infectious diseases.
The new coronavirus has spread quickly, partly because those infected can be contagious before they even know they are sick. In other words, those people are asymptomatic. This word has a lot going on. Let's break it down. A symptom is a change in the body that shows a disease is present. For example, we wrote on March 30th, most people who get COVID-19 experience mild or moderate symptoms like coughing and high body temperature or fever. Symptomatic is the adjective form of symptom. It means showing that a disease is present. So we could say, a cough and fever are symptomatic of the new coronavirus. The prefix A means without. So what happens when we add the letter A to symptomatic? The word ends up meaning having or showing no signs of disease.
Experts know that asymptomatic people can spread the disease. This is partly why officials are urging people to stay at home as much as possible. In some cases, whole countries were put in lockdown, a state of restricted movement put in place as a security measure. Most people around the world are social distancing. This term is new to everyday English. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, uses it to describe the act of avoiding gatherings and staying about 2 meters away from other people. The World Health Organization is now using the term physical distancing instead of social distancing. The term is a little more exact because people can socialize without being near one another. Social distancing is less extreme than quarantine and isolation.
Isolation separates sick people who have a contagious disease from people who are not sick. Quarantine restricts the movement of people who were around a contagious person to see if they get sick. In the case of COVID-19, the recommended quarantine period is 2 weeks or 14 days. The word was first used in the 1400s in Europe and meant a period of about 40 days. Quarantine can be a noun and a verb. Here it is as a noun. Early in the coronavirus spread, Vietnam restricted travel into the country and put tens of thousands of people into quarantine. And here it is as a verb. Dr. Fauci quarantined himself after two people who work at the White House were found to have the new coronavirus.
Many experts say in order for it to be safe for places to reopen, widespread testing and contact tracing need to be in place. Contact tracing requires investigative action. Tracers work with confirmed COVID-19 patients to learn whom they have been close to. The tracers then inform those people that they may have been infected. The tracers also provide advice on what actions to take. In some places, such as South Korea and Singapore, contact tracing started early in the pandemic.
Social distancing, isolation, and quarantining are all done to help flatten the curve. This phrase, now extremely common in the age of COVID-19, means to slow the spread of disease. The same number of people might get sick, but infections happen over a longer period. This eases the pressure on emergency and healthcare resources. Hospitals in most areas have a limited number of beds and breathing machines, called ventilators. These machines are extremely important for treating patients with more severe cases of COVID-19. The healthcare industry is also limited in respirators. These are special masks or nose and mouth covers. Medical workers need respirators to protect themselves from contagious patients. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Some Asian governments that have had a decreasing number of coronavirus cases are considering permitting travel to some cities. Experts predict that bubbles, where travel is permitted, will form while restrictions continue in places where infection numbers remain high. The number of new cases of COVID-19, the disease the virus causes, has eased in much of the Pacific area. Australia, Hong Kong, Macau, New Zealand, South Korea, Taiwan, mainland China, and Vietnam have reported low levels of infection in the past month. In an effort to cut off the spread of the virus, many Asian governments have banned foreign nationals, with a few exceptions. Local people and foreign permit holders must spend 14 days in quarantine after each entry. Experts say so-called country-to-country bubbles could help the air travel and tourism industries. Trade related to travel has been hit hard since the coronavirus spread outside of China. The industry group World Travel and Tourism Council estimates that as many as 49 million jobs related to travel are at risk in the Asia-Pacific area. Rajiv Biswas is an Asia-Pacific economist for the company IHS Market. He said, "It's very much an issue about how to reopen travel, and not only for tourism, but also for business, because business travelers also cannot travel." Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison and New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern have met to discuss the issue. Australian media reported that the two leaders talked about establishing a quarantine-free travel area for their countries. Biswas said such a move could be a sign of things to come for other countries with low virus infection rates. No other governments appear to have had official talks on the idea. But Biswas suggests that Hong Kong, Macau, mainland China, and Taiwan could be next to consider the idea. A Hong Kong Executive Council member suggested this month that the territory could form a bubble with Macau. Chiu Cheng Shun is deputy director of Chang Gung Memorial Hospital near Taipei. He said Taiwan could consider opening travel from low-risk countries and not require visitors to quarantine for 14 days. Visitors could instead take their body temperatures each day and report any signs of health problems to travel agencies. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Today, on our national parks journey, we visit a land of giants, high up in California's Sierra Nevada mountains. Here, you will find the largest living things on Earth, as well as the tallest mountain in the continental United States. You will also find the deepest canyon in America. Welcome to Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Park. The park gets its name from the area's ancient sequoia trees. They are among the oldest trees on the planet. Millions of years ago, different kinds of sequoias grew in many different places. Only two kinds exist today, the redwood and the giant sequoia. Both are found in California. Redwoods are taller, but the trunks of giant sequoias are much bigger. Sequoia National Park's forests are thick with giant sequoias. Many of the trees are several thousand years old. The largest is called General Sherman. It is named after a U.S. general in the Civil War, William Tecumseh Sherman. The tree is 31 meters around. It stands almost 84 meters tall, and it continues to grow. It sits within the park's giant forest. The forest is home to over 8,000 sequoia trees. General Sherman is more than 2,200 years old. It is the world's largest tree in terms of the amount of wood it contains. The National Park Service says if the tree were cut down, it would provide a huge amount of wood construction planks. It says if they were laid end to end, they would stretch for almost 200 kilometers.
In the late 1800s, people grew concerned about logging activity in the area. They sought to protect the giant sequoias from being cut down for wood. One of those people was Walter Fry. In 1888, he came to the Sierra Nevada mountains as a logger himself. He spent 5 days with a team of loggers trying to take down a single giant sequoia tree. Fry then decided to count the tree's rings to learn its age. The answer shocked and saddened him. The tree they had cut down was more than 3,200 years old. He and his team of loggers had ended thousands of years of growth. The experience led Fry to change jobs. He became a naturalist. He studied the trees and measured the size of fallen sequoias. He also joined the fight to protect them from future loggers. when a petition was created to urge Congress to create a national park in the area, Fry was the third person to sign it. Sequoia National Park was established on September 25, 1890. It became the country's second national park after Yellowstone.
In 1940, Congress established another park near Sequoia, Kings Canyon. It and Sequoia National Park have been managed together since 1943. Kings Canyon is home to the deepest canyon in the United States, as well as a famous sequoia forest called Grant Grove. Here, you will find the world's second biggest tree, the General Grant Tree. It is over 3,000 years old. Along with the world's biggest trees, the area is also home to one of America's highest peaks, Mount Whitney. It measures 4,414 meters. It lies in the eastern part of Sequoia National Park. While many visitors travel here to witness the giant sequoias, some visitors also come here to climb Mount Whitney. The climbing trail itself begins at an elevation of over 2,400 meters, already very high for some people. Many hikers experience altitude sickness while trying to reach the top. More than 30,000 people try to climb Mount Whitney each year. Only about 10,000 reach the top. Of course, the park offers less extreme hikes as well. One of the most popular is the Morrow Rock Trail. Morrow Rock itself rises more than 2,000 meters. But hikers only need to climb the final 90 meters to reach the top. From there, they are rewarded with stunning views, the towering Sierra Nevada mountains, and kilometers of giant sequoia forests. Climbers also get a view of the 90-kilometer-long Kaweah River, which runs through a deep canyon.
Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Park is home to a richly diverse animal world. More than 300 species of wildlife live in the park. Mammals include the tiny white-footed mouse, the gray fox, and the bobcat. Black bears are also common. Bird species include the California quail, the northern owl, and the acorn woodpecker. There are also many animals that swim, slither, hop, or crawl. Visitors might see a northern Pacific tree frog, a western pond turtle, or the colorful rainbow trout. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.